Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Lucky Charm by Annabelle Chase, narrated by Emily Lawrence. Chapter 1.
You're going to wear that?
Gareth asked. It was impossible to miss the criticism in his tone, mainly because he made no effort to disguise it. I looked down at my tasteful blouse and trousers. I'm attending a funeral, Gareth. What do you expect me to wear? The dress I wore to the Spellbound High School dance?
Well, you might have more fun if you exposed a little flesh.
Ugh, what was it with vampires and exposed flesh? I turned to face my vampire ghost roommate. I am attending the funeral of a wizard I've never met. I hardly think fun should be at the top of my agenda. It was also my first official coven ceremony.
Aye. You're right. I suppose it doesn't really matter what you wear anyway,
Gareth said.
Your grief cloak will cover it.
I froze. What's a grief cloak? He clucked his tongue.
Have they still not told you about proper attire? Academy standards really are slipping.
The academy was Arabella St. Simon Academy, where I attended remedial witchcraft classes. I was new to witchcraft. New to the town of Spellbound and all its paranormal ways, and the grief cloak was the latest on a long list of important things I still didn't know. Should I send Cedric over to Begonia's? Or maybe to Millie's? I knew one of my classmates would have a spare cloak. They each had older siblings and, as a result, lots of hand-me-downs.
As long as you wear your black cloak, you'll be fine, Gareth said. Most of the coven's grief cloaks have symbolic embroidery of some kind. You'll see later.
I'm just glad it will be dark outside so that I don't have to fly solo on my broom, I said. With my intense fear of heights, it was bad enough that I had to ride on a broomstick at all. The funeral, however, was to be held on Swan Lake at midnight, part of the coven ritual. Although I had passed the first phase of broomstick training, I still wasn't permitted to ride past sunset. I needed to log more hours in the air first. Many more hours than I was willing to spend hundreds of feet above the ground with only a narrow piece of wood between my legs.
So, whose broom are you riding on? He asked. And do they know what to expect?
I glared at him over my shoulder. I took an extra dose of anti-anxiety potion after dinner. I have no intention of disgracing myself at a funeral. Gareth chuckled.
Knowing you, I'm sure you'll find a way.
I pulled a black cloak from the back of my closet and swung it over my shoulders. I hope it's not too chilly at the lake. The weather in town tended to stay on the mild side, despite its location near the Pocono Mountains, all thanks to the spell that contained the town and allowed creatures of the night to walk around in daylight without burning to a Kentucky Fried crisp. I'm riding with Ginger, I said.
How did she draw the unlucky straw?
He asked. I went into the bathroom to brush my hair. I am not an unlucky straw. Ginger volunteered. She told me so herself. Gareth stifled a laugh.
Are you certain? She has that beautiful red hair. I bet she prefers it without vomit.
Magpie screeched, alerting us to Ginger's arrival before the wind chimes clanged. I shot a quizzical look at Gareth. That's new, I said. Magpie doesn't usually act like a watchdog. Gareth shrugged.
Perhaps he's coming around to you.
Doubtful. The only thing Magpie came around for was a can of tuna, and to torment me with his soul-sucking face. I hustled downstairs to open the door for Ginger.
Are you so excited? She asked as I opened the door. Your first coven funeral!
It's my first funeral in Spellbound, actually, I said. Although I'd watched the funeral procession for Gareth, I hadn't attended. The long line of vampires in red cloaks had been far too intimidating, not to mention the fact that I hadn't met Gareth at that point. I had the distinct pleasure of making his acquaintance after he was the walking dead undead. Is that your only cloak? Ginger asked, frowning. Oh, boy. It is, but it's black, and it'll be dark outside, right? Ginger brightened. You're right. It'll be fine.
We'll have to put it on the list for later, though. You'll definitely need a grief cloak. Everyone in the coven has one.
Told you so, Gareth called after me.
I stuck out my tongue before following Ginger out the door. Her broomstick was in the driveway, propped up against my 1988 green Volvo, affectionately known as Sigmund.
You sure you're ready to fly with me at night? Ginger asked.
Do I have a choice? The sky was black as we rode through the chilly night air, with only the moon's light to guide us. Ginger made sure to position me in front of her, just in case my anti-anxiety potion failed me. The fey lanterns of Spellbound twinkled below. I tried my best to enjoy the moment, even though I was scared witless. My fingers ached from the tight grip I had on the broom handle. I was relieved when we arrived on the shores of Swan Lake. It looked so different from my first encounter. It had been daylight when I got lost in my car and ended up on the other side of the lake. The day my life was forever altered. Tonight, the shore was dotted with black cloaks. I noticed the floating funeral pyre and quickly realized what kind of ritual this was going to be.
We're going to burn him? I asked. Ginger looked at me like I had two heads.
Of course. What did you expect?
So we were Vikings.
But Raissa was a witch and she was buried on the grounds of her cottage.
Raissa was never one to follow Spellbound traditions. Plus, she wasn't one of us.
Technically, neither was I. Once everyone had arrived, Lady Weatherby took her place beside the float, which was currently anchored to shore. Her long cloak billowed in the breeze. The darkness and somber occasion managed to enhance her commanding presence.
We are gathered here to celebrate the life of Joseph, a beloved wizard of Spellbound. He has walked through the doorway to the other side, where our ancestors await him with open arms. May the spirits guide him, and may he find everlasting peace.
The winds in the east rise for you, Joseph, a group of witches cried. The winds of the west will steer you to everlasting peace, another group cried.
Joseph's son, Felix, will do the honors.
A middle-aged man stood beside Lady Weatherby, clutching a thick wooden stick. He extended it toward her, and, with the flick of her fingers, flames sprouted from the wood. He walked over, and the flames kissed the floating pyre. They began to lick the wood, slowly at first, and then quite greedily. The anchor was removed, and the wooden structure floated toward the middle of the lake. The fire burned hotter and brighter, cutting a striking image on the darkened body of water. Everyone on the shore joined hands and began to sing. Unsurprisingly, I didn't recognize the song. It was a haunting melody, sad, yet strangely uplifting. As atmospheric as the whole ritual was, I was relieved when it was finally over. Funerals made me uneasy, given my history. I'd attended my mother's when I was 3, and my father's when I was 7. My father's parents followed later. Dozens of broomsticks launched into the air at once, and I was amazed that there were no accidents. Unlike me, the rest of the coven seemed to know what they were doing. We flew back to town, where everyone gathered for refreshments in the all-purpose room of the academy.
He looked good for a 3-day wake, someone commented.
Because the coven waited for the full moon to perform the ritual, the body was laid out for 3 days in Joseph's house. I didn't attend the wake, but it seemed that everyone was relieved it wasn't a 20-day wake. Those were apparently brutal and smelly. I waited in line to offer my condolences to Felix. This was the hardest part for me, being confronted with someone else's pain. It hit too close to home.
Emma Hart, isn't it?
Felix said, shaking my hand. He was average height, with a slim build and kind eyes.
Yes, it's nice to meet you. I wish we were meeting under happier circumstances.
Death comes to all of us eventually, I'm afraid,
he said.
It was my father's time, and he knew it. He was well prepared, and, oddly, that is a comfort.
It's not odd at all, I said. Although I was still young when my grandmother died, her death didn't come as a shock like the others. We'd had a little time to prepare, and that somehow made her passing easier.
This is your first ritual, I hear,
Felix said,
I'm sorry to make it a funeral.
No, it was amazing, I said. Very moving.
Speaking of moving, a voice said behind me, let's get on with it.
I looked behind me to see Jemima, a young witch with a sour attitude. I tried to befriend her, but her personality didn't make it easy.
It was good to meet you, Felix, I said.
Same here.
I found Ginger standing next to the refreshment table, chatting with her sister and a few of the older members of the coven.
What did you think?
She asked, handing me a cup of burstberry juice.
It was breathtaking, I said. What happens to the floating funeral pyre?
I knew firsthand that the magical border of Spellbound extended partway into the lake. I wasn't sure if Joseph's float would simply bounce off the invisible barrier and eventually drift back to shore.
We do a spell that allows it to disintegrate by sunrise, Ginger said.
Magically efficient.
No one seems sad, I said. Did Joseph have friends in the coven?
He kept to himself in his later years, Ginger said. But he had friends. Joseph was a huge advocate for animal rights, too. He donated a lot of money to Paws and Claws over the years. I had a certain fondness for the Animal Rescue Center, since that was where I met Sedgwick.
Death for someone like Joseph isn't a sad ending, Meg interjected.
Ginger's older sister shared her flaming red hair and alabaster skin.
It's simply a new beginning.
Was that how Gareth saw his latest incarnation as a vampire ghost? A new beginning? I guessed it was one way of looking on the bright side.
How long will people stay here? I asked, fighting the yawn that was building inside of me.
Until sunrise, Ginger replied, and I nearly spit my burstberry juice all over her grief cloak.
Not everyone, Meg added quickly, gauging my reaction. Only those who want to and can. We know you have class in the morning.
I gulped down the remainder of my juice. I was a functional insomniac. I'd give it my best shot. Chapter 2. On the way to class the next morning, I snagged a latte from Brouhaha with an extra shot of bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Everyone in the classroom seemed to be struggling to stay awake. Ginger basically phoned in a lesson on witches and their relationship to nature. Each time she mentioned the earth or the ground, I pictured myself curling up in a ball in the grass outside and falling asleep. So much for the potency of my extra shot. By the end of the class, I was openly yawning, but I didn't worry because so was everyone else, including Ginger. I got the impression that she continued socializing somewhere else after she dropped me at home. A white-faced owl swooped into the room, grazing the top of Sophie's head. Good thing she was resting it on the table. A spot of drool glistened in the sunlight. The owl dropped a message on the desk in front of Ginger and flew straight out the door without stopping. Ginger unrolled the note.
Emma, Lady Weatherby and Professor Holmes would like to see you in her office after class.
Uh-oh. That's not a message any witch wants to receive. Begonia's brow creased with worry.
What do you think they want?
I had my suspicions, but I'd wait until the conversation actually took place to confirm them.
I'm sure it's nothing, I said. Lady Weatherby probably just wants to tell me that my grip on my wand is too loose or something. She's always on my case to practice.
I left the classroom and walked down several long corridors until I reached Lady Weatherby's office at the far end of the building. It was the largest office in the building, as one would expect. On the wall behind her desk hung a portrait of a young and vibrant witch. She wore the very same headdress of twisted antlers that Lady Weatherby wore now.
Who is that?
I asked, pointing to the portrait. Lady Weatherby clasped her hands together.
I'm glad you asked. She is Arabella St. Simon, the Academy's namesake.
So she was the one we had to thank for the Ass Academy. Nice going, Arabella. She looks so young, I said. And yet she was wearing the headdress that indicated she'd been the head of the coven. How long ago was that? Lady Weatherby was the current head, and before her was her mother, Agnes.
Arabella was the youngest head of the coven in our history, she said. She was greatly revered, hence the academy.
Professor Holmes sat in the chair closest to the desk. He gestured for me to sit beside him. "So, what's her story?" I asked. I figured she must be deceased by now.
"She was the strongest head of the coven in 1,000 years,
Lady Weatherby said, with more emotion than she generally mustered.
"Her death was a tragedy, and we mourn her loss to this day. It is an honor for me to sit beneath her watchful gaze every day. It makes me aspire to do great things."
So Lady Weatherby admired Arabella greatly, but had a tumultuous relationship with her own mother. I wondered what the difference was between Arabella and Agnes. Over in the corner, a black cat awoke from a nap. There was so much hair that I could scarcely discern its face from its bottom. Only when it raised its head did I realize that the cat wore a tiny headdress identical to Lady Weatherby's. I squelched my laughter, not wanting to insult anyone. Lady Weatherby followed my gaze to the stretching cat. Magpie would kill for some of that fluff.
"That is Chairman Meow," Lady Weatherby said. "My familiar. You do remember that the rest of us have feline familiars here."
Although I'd seen Lady Weatherby's familiar in passing, this was the closest I'd ever been to him. He tended to keep a respectful distance. "He has beautiful green eyes," I said. They shone so brightly that I had no doubt they glowed in the dark. "Does he mind wearing the headdress?" When I was 9, I remembered my neighbor trying to coax his dog into wearing reindeer antlers for Christmas. It didn't end well for the antlers. Chairman Meow struck me as the type of cat that would speak his mind if displeased. In fact, I suspected that he and Magpie would get along swimmingly.
"He does not mind the headdress," Lady Weatherby said. "Now, if we can please get back to business. Professor Holmes tells me that you were able to communicate with Raissa at her cottage. He further informed me that you were unaware that you were dealing with a ghost."
She tapped her fingernails on the desk in a gesture that was reminiscent of her mother. Agnes tapped her own twisted fingernails in a similar fashion when I visited her in the spellbound care home. I had a feeling Lady Weatherby wouldn't appreciate the comparison. "She was different from Gareth," I explained. "She could touch things, move things. She made me a drink called Pure of Heart. And she frightened the living daylights out of me." Lady Weatherby and Professor Holmes exchanged a look.
"So she neglected to tell you that she had passed on?"
Lady Weatherby asked. "I only found out the truth when I ran into Professor Holmes on the way back home." It had been quite a shock to discover she was dead. The old witch even had iron teeth. The sound of their clicking had haunted my dreams ever since that day.
"We have been assuming that your ability to see Gareth was the result of his connection to his former house and office. Now we are not so certain."
Lady Weatherby's expression was a mixture of concern and frustration. "I have no connection to Raissa," I said. "She told me herself that we weren't part of the same coven. She knew about my birthmark, though." Lady Weatherby's brow lifted.
"Birthmark? What birthmark?"
Oops. Probably should have reported that discovery. "I have a small birthmark on the nape of my neck in the shape of a little blue star. Raissa seemed to know about it, even though I was unaware of it." Professor Holmes stood and walked to the back of my chair.
"May we see it?"
I lifted my hair off my neck and displayed the birthmark. He studied it for a moment before beckoning Lady Weatherby over. Wordlessly, she rose from her chair and stood behind me.
"Fascinating," she said. "It is very much like a star."
"And blue at that,"
Professor Holmes added. "What do you think it means?" I asked. "Raissa seemed to know I was coming, too, and she knew Sedgwick's name." Lady Weatherby returned to her seat behind the desk.
"She is beyond the veil now. She has access to more information than you and I could dream of."
"Then why couldn't she tell me about my coven? She didn't seem to have all of the answers."
"No, death does not make us omniscient," Lady Weatherby replied. "However, she is infinitely wiser now than she was when she was living."
"Like Gandalf when he levels up from a gray wizard to a white one," I said. Lady Weatherby stared down her aquiline nose at me.
"Your human references have no relevance here,"
I beg to differ. Do you think it's worth going to see her again? Although I didn't love the idea of revisiting the creepy cottage with the boneyard, I'd suck it up if it meant answers. No, Lady Weatherby and Professor Holmes said in unison.
Raissa is dangerous, Professor Holmes said, living or dead.
I shall have members of the coven research the birthmark, Lady Weatherby said. Thank you for your candor. I expect you will alert us to any further discoveries.
I nodded. I'm as eager to know more about myself as you are. I meant it. I wanted to learn more about my mother and her side of the family. Did she know she was a witch? What happened to her parents? Was her death an accident?
I've been meaning to tell you, Lady Weatherby said as I rose to my feet. I tried your magically delicious muffins. Your baking is not as terrible as I expected.
It was the closest she would come to a compliment. Thank you? To my surprise, Chairman Meow escorted me to the door. He had a regal air about him, and I could only assume that came from his position as Lady Weatherby's familiar. From his purposeful strides, I couldn't decide whether he was politely seeing me out or throwing me out. When it came to cats, it was hard to tell. Millie stood on my doorstep, arms crossed and a scowl on her face. Hey, Millie, I said. What's going on? She blew straight past me and into the house. They revoked my broomstick license for a whole month, she complained. I couldn't hide my surprise. Millie was the star pupil in our broomstick flying class. How did that happen? Do you have anything to drink? She asked. I had to walk all the way here, and now I'm parched. Sure, I said, gesturing for her to follow me into the kitchen. Do you have any Zazzle Punch? She asked. That's my favorite. I'm afraid I don't. How about Lime Fizz? She groaned. I suppose that will have to do. I poured her a glass of Lime Fizz, and we settled down at the counter. So, what happened? You fly a broomstick as well as any witch in the coven. Millie couldn't resist a proud smile. I was late coming home from the hideout last night, she said. I was in danger of missing my curfew, so I decided to fly home. Millie's broomstick license, like mine, was provisional. We were only permitted to fly during daylight hours until we passed the next phase. You flew in the dark? The sun had only just set, she said bitterly. It was my stupid luck that Sheriff Hugo was out on the golf course at the country club and saw me fly overhead. And he recognized you? Of course. She guzzled down her lime fizz. I never should have stayed for the end of the movie. I ended up missing curfew and losing my license. So not worth it. I resisted the urge to tell her that rules existed for a reason. That didn't seem like the kind of response she was looking for. Then again, I was surprised she would come to me at all. Although we were friends, we weren't as close as she and Sophie. I was wondering if you might have any way of helping me get my license back, Millie said. Now I understood. She wasn't here for sympathy. She was here for action. I'm a public defender, Millie, I said. I don't have any involvement in the bureaucratic end of things. Millie ran her index finger along the rim of the glass. But people seem to listen to you. Maybe you could just lay out my case. It's only a month, Millie. If I were you, I would just wait it out. Millie's face reddened. That's because you don't like to fly. It's going to be torture for me to not have my broomstick for an entire month. Why do we even have all these stupid rules? I'm really sorry. I wish I could help. Millie's shoulders slumped. I suppose I can just ride tandem for the rest of the month. At least that would allow me time in the air, although it won't count toward my full license. Magpie wandered in, took one look at Millie, and hissed before scampering into an adjacent room. I've been thinking, Millie said, eyeing the empty doorway. This cat of yours might improve his behavior if he spent more time around other cats. What exactly are you proposing? A party? I bit back a laugh at the thought of cats sitting around the table in party hats. Something like that, she said, completely serious. Our familiars tend to spend a lot of time together. It wouldn't be out of the question to include Magpie, even though he isn't your familiar. I was touched. Millie wasn't the warmest witch in Spellbound, but her idea was a thoughtful one. I can't say for certain that Magpie will go along with it, but I'm certainly willing to try. I'd say the hairless cat was grumpy ever since his owner died, except I had the sense that Magpie's personality was unchanged by Gareth's death. Millie clapped her hands. Well, this cheers me up, despite the pesky license situation. I'll speak to the other girls and we'll arrange something. It's probably best if I host, I said. I don't know how amenable Magpie would be to leaving the house. I glanced down at the savage beast as he studied Millie with his usual murderous eyes. Millie took a nervous step backward. Yes, here is probably best, where his owner can keep him in line. Magpie doesn't really have an owner now, I said, if he ever truly did. Well, hopefully we can work on smoothing his rough edges. Rough edges was putting it mildly. If he doesn't draw blood, I'll consider the party a success. Millie scrunched up her nose. You and I have vastly different definitions of success. Given that my measure of success was not puking during flight on a broomstick, and Millie's was executing a perfect 90-degree angle, she wasn't wrong. I'm sure we do, Millie. I'm sure we do. Chapter 3. Today was the day I designated to see the town council about organizing a commission to review Spellbound sentencing guidelines. Traditionally, crimes were firmly punished here, but it had recently come to light that many residents felt the length of sentences was too harsh. Certain people, including prosecuting attorney Rochester, felt that it was time to take a closer look at Spellbound's laws and see whether changes could and should be made. Thanks to my fairy friend Lucy, who served as the assistant to Mayor Knightsbridge, I knew that the council was meeting at 10. I wore my most professional-looking outfit and took extra time with my hair, much to Gareth's relief. I wanted my proposal to be taken seriously, so I needed to look the part. I ran into Lucy in front of the great hall. She was busy shooing pigeons away from the overhang above the entrance. There you are, she said, fluttering toward me, her pink wings glistening in the sunlight. Have they started yet? I asked as we entered the building. No, you've arrived just in time. Lucy looped her arm through mine and steered me toward the double doors that led into the great hall. The great hall was an impressive structure. From its high ceilings and stunning architecture to its grand lobby, it was the right place to make big decisions. My trials were also held here, so I was starting to know the building well. Although my office was close by, I wasn't fortunate enough to be in the same building. That honor was reserved for the registrar's office, the very first place I'd ever visited in Spellbound. They won't mind, will they? I asked. You said residents show up unannounced all the time at these meetings, right? Lucy chewed her lip. I wouldn't say all the time. Just because they're allowed to come during open meetings doesn't mean they feel encouraged to do so. What determines whether a meeting is open or closed? It depends on what's on the agenda. If they're making important decisions, they'll sometimes ask for feedback in advance and consider the issue behind closed doors. Today is listed as an open meeting. And you'll tell me when it's the right time for me to speak? I asked. You can count on me. Lucy pushed open the double doors and froze beside me. I didn't realize what the problem was until I saw the council members. Wayne Stone, a part-time accountant and full-time troll, was in the process of jumping down from the dais to the floor below. What's he doing? I asked in a hushed tone. He's going to hurt himself. Trolls did not get much stockier than Wayne. He was liable to give himself a hernia or blow out a knee. It isn't just Wayne, Lucy said, her eyes round. Check out Lord Gilder. Oh my. Lord Gilder, head of the Vampire Coven and an incredibly formal member of the council, was balancing his gavel on the tip of his nose like a circus seal. The elegant, yet fearsome, Lady Weatherby sat beside him, clapping merrily at his performance.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?